Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. This time I wanted to talk to you about the economy and what's going on with the front lines, but because front lines are stale on the Ukrainian side, as everyone's preparing for weird Russian attacks, which are probably not going to happen in the areas that you expect. However, there are other issues, such as the economical consequences of Russia being under attack with their oil refineries. However, the most important thing that caught my attention first, and why I have Evita with me on the show as well, by the way. Say hi, please, honey.
Hi, I'm Evita, the leading expert in warfare and politics, obviously.
I mean, you're about to marry me in about a week. That alone makes you an expert in these areas, because politics, definitely. Warfare, I can, being a man that wants to live, I have to, you know, surrender immediately anyways. but no, seriously, the thing is, I'm late on my foreign policy media article, foreign policy magazine article, sorry, because my beloved editor, Mr. Palmer, blessed be his name, he's an awesome dude. If you've listened to my comments about him, you understand. But I was asked with explaining to mostly American audiences, what does the average Russian want from this war? How does victory look like? And you see, there's the problem, because I use my sources, I called a bunch of people, and the problem is that I don't even know how to explain this, but the average Russian mostly wants to survive the war, and not much else. The whole political activity is just so different from what you would expect, and it's a super complex issue, and I didn't even know where to start. However, I decided that maybe a place where I could start would be with how the Afghanistan war was treated. So I called my mom and asked how her friends and relatives treated this stuff, and she told me that, at least in her school, well, in Latvian schools at that point you had to study for 11 years, and in Russian schools for 10 years, so you'd finish a Russian language school at the age of 17, while a Latvian language school in the age of 18, at least in Latvia. So you had like two opportunities to get into university, because again, no paid spots, very limited university places, so a bunch of people would just move away to university, to the Russian schools, to evade this. That worked only for the first 2 years, because after that they tried to pick up students from universities as well to get into the war. And I thought that would be a whole new episode, but I thought that, you know, this is interesting enough to be talked about, because just for a bit of a historical break before we go back to the main stuff. But knowing Evita's parents and what they've been through, I thought I'd ask to talk to her mom, and maybe she knows something about how the average Soviet citizen felt during the Afghan war and what was happening back then. And I haven't even heard this, but from the short snippet she told me, she said it's going to be very interesting. And I'll be using that in my article later, but I really wanted her to tell you the story, because she was just excited when she came back home. And maybe that's something that we can truly do and compare this whole Afghan war experience of the Soviet era with today. So please, Evita, your go.
Yeah, my mom actually had a lot to tell me about it. She grew up in Belarus in the village in middle of nowhere, and she was a teen during the Afghan war when it started, in her early teens. And she had an older brother that was a subscription age, but he thankfully was not taken to the war, because they had an uncle who was a big shot in the police. So he arranged everything and he stayed home. But his best friend, he was mobilized and taken to Afghanistan. And in the first week, he got shot in the leg. Thankfully, the injury was not serious. He was transported to the hospital, and after he left hospital, he was not transferred to the front lines anymore, because he sustained a damage, an injury, and he was serving in the rear. So he didn't see front lines again after his hospital stay, and everyone thought that it was the best outcome that can be, because his injury was not serious and he lived a normal life after the war. I wanted to specify that during Afghan war, as my mom told me, her brother told her that Soviets mobilized men only from families who had several children, so they didn't take sons from families who had only one children, and men who were married and had children already themselves also were not mobilized. And comparing it to nowadays Russian mobilization and how they treat their injured, if they treat them, even it you can see that difference, how more humane and civilized it was in the late 70s and 80s.
Yeah, thanks, Evit. I wanted to ask my beloved fiance, soon to be my wife, by the way, we're getting married on the 7th, to tell the story of her mom herself, because otherwise, it feels kind of uneasy if I would just ask for all this information for Evit to ask to her mom, and then I would have to retell a retelling. Kind of seems silly. Just so I'll be trying to put together my article for the Foreign Policy magazine together with this stuff. Because, yeah, it's tons of apathy, tons of stuff I don't know, bit of a mess, but things you should kind of have to do. Difficult, really. But again, I'm getting married, and the funding's going to help me. Talking about which, a slight break here before I move on to economics. Please, not mention this in the end, please consider supporting my show on patreon.com/easternborder, or just clicking the donate button on easternborder.lv. You know, that helps me support the show, because I don't have any other options here. You guys are my income. You're my bosses. You're the people who keep this going. I wanted to say thank you and happy Easter to all of you who do, and to those of you who just listen to the show. But if you can afford it, please, if you can, please support the show and help us keep going with this stuff. We won't be going anywhere anytime soon, but it's always nice to understand that I matter to some of you enough so that you're ready to actually pay me for this, and it's wonderful, and it keeps me independent. I don't have to advertise any random bullshit that I really would hate. But yeah, economy stuff. There are some issues here. First of all, if you compare it to February, then the gasoline production in Russia has decreased by 17% at this moment. It's gone to the point, because of the Ukrainian drone missile strikes, but it's gone to the point where, they have lost 1/6 of their position. At the beginning of March, they also prohibited, forbade exports to other countries. And as far as I know, and many people also in my contact list report this, Russia is actually importing gasoline from Belarus. And that also ties together with the fact that they produce less like crude oil from which to make the gasoline from. They have a huge issue with this, and it's hurting a lot. And it was weird to hear that at one point last week, I was approximately near the whole terror attack thing. Yeah, when then apparently Zelensky, when media reported and Zelensky sort of confirmed that the United States have asked to stop these strikes at the refineries, of the oil refineries, because, so that oil will not be as expensive. Yeah, I was stunned about this. Because Zelensky reported, yeah, sure, the United States, you might not like this, but what else are we going to do? And that's totally fine. I mean, that's the thing, how I see it, okay? If, as Republicans are currently blocking aid to Ukraine, this is a way, because, Ukraine isn't doing this because they would want to piss off anyone. They are just out of options. They have to hurt Russia somehow, and this is where Putin is being hurt the most. Thing is, it also hurts a bunch of other people involved, but, if you are low on ammunition and low on supplies, and you don't want to lose the war, and Russia isn't really into attacking things, this, at least at this point, at least, well, what do you do? So I think that if the Republicans decide to allow this aid package for Ukraine to pass through, then there might be some negotiations, and then Americans might get something from this whole situation. But if Republicans just keep, you know, withholding aid, then no, seriously, what else is Ukraine going to do? Just saying, because they cannot just, you know, lay down their arms and stop and not fight against Russia after all. So, yeah, I support them. Because for one, the United States still has cheaper gasoline than we have in Europe. Because it's about, like, last I've checked and Discord and price checking, United States people still pay more, like we pay more than the United States people per liter. Although you guys buy it per gallon because of huge cars and everything. Yeah, you still pay way less than we do here in Eastern Europe. So. And you earn way more money, so stop complaining. Just that, I suppose. But all in all, what else can Ukraine do? However, there are other issues. Another thing that I want to mention is that for some reason, British intelligence posted that Russia is recruiting 30,000 soldiers per month and equipping them at this point. And I have no idea where they got the number. I think they posted this because of the Ukrainian Secret Service thing where Budanov wanted to post maybe a psychological attack. In short, that is absolutely not true. I couldn't even find where they would have taken this information. I mean, look, I have my own sources. I have a lot of reasons to believe when stuff is reliable and true and when it's not. And when I see some information from, say, the British intelligence, which I absolutely cannot confirm, and which seems like outlandish, weird stuff to me, I'm just looking at everything and checking if this checks out. You know, where are they getting this? Do they have information that I don't? And the thing is, it doesn't check out at all to me. If it was true, then you would see 360,000 people per year joining Russia's forces, which is not the case. We also see a bunch of Russians just complaining about how the people, like the Z people, basically are complaining how they're lacking manpower in every possible quality in the front lines. And also, everyone is just being afraid of being conscripted now, and there is no influx that huge happening. We do not see sudden surges in the front lines. That is still zero rotation. If they would be recruiting 30,000 people per month, there would be some rotation of the forces from the front lines of the rear. Nothing like that is happening in the Russian army. So I simply, one, the things that British intelligence posted, they do not fit anything that I've seen. Two, I don't even know where their sources were at. It just seems very weird to me. So most likely they just are helping out some Ukrainian thing or whatever, but I honestly can't tell. But that was stunning because previously the UK intelligence reports have been extremely accurate. This time, just it wasn't. So that made me a bit amazed. Also, another thing, I was very surprised to find out that apparently Russian companies, military companies, organizations who are producing military equipment are purchasing nitrates. Nitrate sulfites, to be exact, from European Union and the United States. And in the sense that these things are used to produce explosives and powder, gunpowder, for both artillery shells and guns and everything. And at the same time, one of the reasons why EU wasn't able to deliver their million shells, only they delivered 300,000 shells to Ukraine, was the fact that they have their own shortage of these nitrate sulfites. It was done apparently through some Turkish company that just, you know, EU and US sells to Turkey. Turkey then just does magical accounting things, and this whole stuff goes to Russia. And the company's excuse is that, oh no, we didn't know, and that our nitrates cannot be used to produce stuff. No, of course they can if they're chemically treated or anything. It just seems so ridiculous. Just like how just like how I was complaining, I think in October, that companies from the EU and the US were selling these tools to make precision munitions to Russia. I mean, business is business, but at this point, this is the point where I'm saying that, yeah, we need some regulations for that. Because if you are a arms dealing company, not like I can boycott those things, right? Not like anyone of the ordinary people can deal with these arms companies. You can't boycott companies that sell massive chemicals for guns and everything. This is where free market does not work. Sorry, libertarian people. I wish that Mr. Heaton listens to this, but this is the one of the few cases where I say that no, this is not a free market. We kind of just boycott and not buy from them. This is where we, as a people, have to work through our representatives in the government to show them what's what and just do some sanctions upon them, because again, this is a guns company. And not your average guns. I mean, I suppose people in the United States can boycott a certain guns producer, but if they make stuff that makes artillery shells, how do you boycott that? How do you sort this out? How do you have an influence on that thing? I kind of doubt the moralities and choices of other companies that produce all this stuff. It's just so weird and nonsensical. Finally, one final thing about this whole mobilization issue. Recently, Michael Nucky and other people were talking about how 300,000 people might be mobilized, but Navalny's old economical aide, Vladimir Milov, came out and said a very interesting thing, that if there's going to be another open mobilization, then you don't have to think about 700,000, like 300,000 people who would be just leaving their qualified positions for joining the army. You have to think about 1 million people, most of them would be qualified specialists, because yeah, they'll have the money to leave Russia. It's 1 million people lost from the workforce, a workforce which already is lacking, well, resources and trained people. If you remember the last year's exploding pipes and the fact that everything's kind of breaking down, and approximately 50% of the companies in total of the Russian workforce say that they have unfulfilled vacancies of their jobs. They have a lot of things that are like hurting things. Regional bus systems, for example, are not delivering passengers because most of the qualified drivers are in Ukraine. Engineers are out. IT specialists are out, or either fighting Ukraine or just escaped Russia. And previously, this stuff was taken over by migrants, the people from Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan and all these places. But, you know, they're also now leaving Russia in droves and not going to come back, because after the terror attack by ISIS-K, I firmly believe, after all the evidence that we've received since last episode, it was ISIS-K. Yeah, you know, if previously it was, because again, sorry, I'm interrupting myself, but if previously I stated that the ethnic tensions will rise and they were hateful because of them building new mosques and building other stuff, yeah, now they have done exactly so. If previously Igor Girkin's buddies and Maxim Kalashnikov's buddies and all these people went out and beat up migrants in Russia, and then the police would just, you know, wave their finger at them and not do anything, now the police is actively participating in beating up these migrants and everything. There's a lot of hate towards people from Central Asia and Russia. And that's going to cause even more acts of terrorism, as literally earlier today, another group that wanted to plan some sort of attack was arrested in Makhachkal. And it's all a bloody mess. So Russia at this day, and I waited until today to release this. This is why this didn't come out in March. See, at this point today, if there would be a mobilization in the foreseeable future, they would start it now. Because this is April the 1st, and then October is where their traditional conscription recruitment starts. This is where you normally pick 18 to 30-year-olds at this point who, you know, aren't studying in universities or you have, even if you finish university, by the way, you're still eligible to be conscripted to serve your time in the Russian army. So right now they're starting the spring conscription. So not a mobilization. And their capacity for the whole system is such that they cannot run this conscription together with a mass mobilization. They might do mobilization more secretly, but they cannot do both. And it seems to me that right now, because of the lack of the workforce and the Russian economy in total, I think what's going to happen is that a lot of people, they're going to try to do this secretly, probably asking for the big businesses which people, you know, you can live without and everything. But it's not going to be as open, because it openly, yeah, Russia just does not have workers in enough levels to pull through this one. And Putin really doesn't want to be seen as pissing off people once again, especially after the act of terrorism. So that's not going to happen anytime soon. So that's good news. The bad news is that it might happen one day still. The bad news is that we still, you know, total haven't been determined to go all the way if necessary for this situation, for the war to end. We're a bit iffy here. And although the economical side of Russia doesn't look hopeful, they will, if we still allow them to smuggle through stuff that's under sanctions, they will find a way and prolong this whole mess. Russia would lose the soon it gave Ukraine everything they needed. Meanwhile, those people who are like wankering about all the situation that's not happening. Yeah, recently I recorded a bunch of stuff that I cannot release because of various reasons, but I lost 5 hours basically of material. But you know, what matters is that as a part of this, I had Alex from History Impossible on once again. And if you remember me being on Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called right now, like if you remember back in the day, if you listen to the show, I was banned from there twice in total because of one Michael Tracy. A human slime, as I call them. A person that was totally a useful idiot to the nth degree and a complete piece of shit, which I am not afraid to say. If I'll ever see him in real life, I will, you know, try to at least physically assault him with my fists and, you know, at least give him some bruises, because he deserves that. And I was just stunned as I have heard. He came out finally and supposedly understood that, oh no, some pro-war people in Russia have been using his materials and misrepresenting them, and then now it comes out and it looks like as if he was always pro-war and pro-Putin, while it was not the case, and his anti-war position has been, you know, corrupted and all sorts of I'm sorry, okay, I'm really sorry about this, but fuck you, Michael Tracy. For one, I think just they stopped paying him. This piece of trash got me banned, and I would have had like quite a huge audience there. And this he only now, after like 2 years of everything, understands how his ultra tanky blame NATO for everything stance was used by Russian propagandists who just worship everything, yeah, and he was totally innocent in all this mess. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Just if you can, because I'm not on the social media. Please, if you can, tag Michael Tracy and just, I don't even know if he truly is the way that he claims to. Invite him over to come to the Eastern Border, just so that he would come over to the show and maybe we can have a talk. I will be super polite. I will be extremely polite, extremely nice, and ultra tolerance to whatever nonsense he says. I will ask him sharp questions, of course. You can be honest about that. And I will ask, and I will obviously doubt his sincerity, because I have every reason to do so, because he won't like bring me back on Twitter anyways. But look, this was so cynical and so stupid and so evil, if I got this right correctly, that is. So this is just worse than just sticking to your guns until the end of the war. I think he finally saw where the wind was blowing and switched. And this is just so, so cynically evil and horrendous that I don't even know where to put it. I'm sorry for maybe like ending the episode on such a note after I've talked about stuff and economy and everything, but I just wanted to mention this because I am sincerely angry, truly angry and pissed off, because I had about 25,000 followers there when I was banned, and maybe it's for the best. I just don't want to go on TikTok anyways, and the show needs to be spread around. Yeah, it's all nonsense. At any rate, please, please, like I said in the middle, consider maybe supporting the show, because I am in your payroll, you're my big boss and everything. And I'll be getting married soon, then I'll be visiting Texas. If you have any questions, and maybe if you want those sweet maps, and if you want to join our Discord and can't find the link, just email me. TheEasternBorder@gmail.com. Send an email. I'm always open there, or you can find me on Facebook or whatever. I'm really open to all your messages and everything, and I love every last one of you. You've been keeping me going, and and I'm trying to just make sure that you guys understand how much I care. And also, you know, how much I'm anxious right now, because I'm getting married in like 6 days, and it's scary. Really, really scary. And I love Evita. She's the best woman ever, but it's still, you know, getting married is... It's not an easy talk to you younger listeners. It's a nervous task, and people in Discord recommend Boost to me. I think I'm going to listen to them at one point. But yeah, that's it so far. Das vidanje, tovarishchi. And as always, remember, happiness is mandatory.